When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you, Andrew. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. Pretty quiet weekend, like yourself, I guess. Not a lot going on, you know. Struggling. Struggling to think what we're going to talk about today.
Bored, if anything. Yeah. Listen, this club, it keeps us entertained. We can't complain about that.
Never a dull moment, it's fair to say. For better or worse, for richer or poorer, for Pepe or Suarez, whatever it might be, they definitely keep us going. Look, we have stuff to talk about, obviously. There was a signing last Friday. We announced
the
signing.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that guy?
Genuinely, I think I might need to watch the FA Cup final again after this, just to remind myself that that happened. It seems impossibly long ago.
Isn't it crazy, like, in the whatever it's been, 2 weeks, just over 2 weeks since we won the FA Cup, so much shit has gone down at this football club. It's genuinely crazy. But yes, we did make a signing, so we'll talk a little bit about Willian a bit later on. But of course, the big news over the weekend was the departure of the head of football, Raul Sanyehi. It was all presented in a very amicable way, wasn't it? In the sense, it was like, ah, we just decided that, you know, we'll go our separate ways now. Thank you, Raul. Thank you, Arsenal. Everything's nice. Lovely. Yeah. Thank you. There's a bit more nuance to it than that. There's a bit more going on than that. But what were your initial thoughts on the departure? I know his performance and the work that he's been doing is something that we have spoken about quite regularly on the podcast. I know that some people were perhaps a bit tired of us, in inverted commas, going on about it. And maybe it
clearly it was just a mad blogger's agenda that we had. Not certainly not one that a billion-dollar corporation would ever take seriously.
No, I mean, look, I can understand why from the outside people would have thought, well, this is a bit tiresome, and I get it. I completely get it. But it was really about trying to keep in focus some of the things that were going on at the football club and some of the ways in which we were operating, which didn't feel right or look right from the outside, you know? So what was your initial thought? I know, because it didn't just sort of happen in an instant. There were rumors, of course, on Twitter. I mean, could there be anything more surreal about this season than finding out Raul Sanyehi was about to be sacked by a gerbil? I mean, it's like the icing on top of the fucking cherry on top of the cake of this mad season we've been on.
Yeah, it was a mad sort of 18 hours between sort of Friday afternoon when the gerbil made his pronouncement. I think it even appeared a couple of other places online. And then sort of obviously, you know, trying to chase that up and find out the truth. And by the time it was announced, we were pretty confident that this was happening, if it hadn't already happened. And I mean, seismic news, really. I suppose I just have to make clear that I've sort of been working on this story all weekend as a journalist. So at this point, I'm going to sort of take my proper journalist hat off and sort of talk about it as a fan, because it's nice for me to have that opportunity. As a fan, I think my main feeling was one of relief, because, as you say, this is a situation that's been ongoing for some time. There have been real concerns about the manner in which Arsenal are being run. And while I don't think that removing Raul Sanyehi comes close to fixing all those problems, I do see it as a step in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah, likewise. I think it is a positive step. I think a number of times on this show, people have said, well, what would you do if you were KSE? What would you do to change things or make things better? And one of the things I remember talking about was, well, put in place some oversight. Put in place a person who's got a clear view of everything that's going on at the club. And I suppose one of the things that we will talk about down the line, perhaps, is that the way that Raul Sanjahi was able to run the club was in some ways a symptom of the way it's being run generally by KSE, in the sense that they're quite hands-off. And he found himself in a position where he had a lot of power at a big organization. And in some ways, he sort of just fell into it because he was appointed as the head of football relations by Ivan Gazidis. He was supposed to work under Gazidis. Gazidis left. Then we had the Sven and Raul power play type thing, which played out. And ultimately, Raul won out. And sort of by accident, by design, by manoeuvring, whatever you want to call it, he is the most important man from a football perspective at Arsenal Football Club because, you know, he's the head of football. He's calling the shots in terms of recruitment and transfers and the manager and the head coach and all that kind of stuff. And it never quite felt like the right way for somebody to get that job. You know, it is one of the quirks of football, as I said in the podcast on Friday with Clive, is that like people find themselves in positions simply because they happen to be in the right place at the right time.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, just ask Vinay, you know, himself, who's now running the club from the very top. And I say that knowing full well, a lot of people have a very high opinion of Vinay, but it is interesting that is sometimes how the chain of command can operate, that you step into that gap. And I think it's interesting that Raul Sanjahi was not brought to Arsenal to do the job he ultimately will be remembered for doing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think that that's really important. I think it's not the job he did at Barcelona either. And you speak to people in Spain and they talk about someone as someone who can execute things pretty effectively. If you say, I really want Neymar, we need to go and get Neymar as a club, by hook or by crook, Raul can make that deal happen. Being the person who is at the very top of the chain making those decisions is a different role. And like I say, not the one Ivan Gazidis earmarked for him when he arrived. So I think we can assume that is part of why this has gone wrong, really.
Yeah, look, we can focus on some of the deals that have happened and the relationships with agents and things that we have spoken about before in terms of Kia Jarabchian with Edu, Kia watching games in the director's box and how at best you would say that was cozy and at worst you would fear that things and decisions were being made which weren't necessarily in the best interests of Arsenal. But you make a great point there, and it's something I'd written down, that really what Raul was doing or the job that he was doing is not what he is best at, right? He is the fixer. He's the guy who was supposed to come in and work with Mislintat, work with Gazidis, you know, the head of recruitment. He was supposed to identify the talent that we were going to bring in. And Raul was the guy who was going to make those deals happen. All of a sudden, hey presto, Raul is the guy who's trying to, you know, set the direction and the agenda for a football club. And that's he's just not that guy. You know, that's not what his skill set is, what his expertise is.
I think sort of more generally, you know, without getting into specifics, I do think there was a bit of a culture clash with Raul. I do think his style of management was really forged in Barcelona, where things do operate a little bit differently. And I think that the way he worked as the head of football or chief exec, whatever you want to call it, was uncomfortable for a lot of people at Arsenal and ultimately uncomfortable for the ownership. And I think that's why we're in the situation we're in now.
Yeah. We might touch on Mislintat a bit later on, because that was obviously one of the one of the relationships that broke down. And there have been a number of relationships, I think, you know, over the course of Sanyehi's time at Arsenal, which have fallen by the wayside, which are, you know, unfortunate for us as a club because some good people have left because of the way things have been operating. But let's look at the bones of this then. 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, maybe, Arsenal appointed a guy called Tim Lewis as a non-executive director. He's a lawyer at Clifford Chance. He's worked with KSE before. He was part of, you know, doing the deal to buy out Ali Sharuzmanov's shares and ultimately the small shareholders as well. So he's somebody that the KSE know very well. They obviously trust in him. As I said on my blog yesterday, when Unai Emery was given the chop back in November, it was I got a text from somebody who said that Raul was going to go too, and it was sort of suggested that there were things in the Pepe deal which had raised concerns, I think, for some people would be the right way of putting it. But obviously that didn't happen. Should it have set alarm bells ringing a bit earlier at Arsenal?
Well, I think alarm bells probably should have rung last spring when Raul Sinieri was looking to potentially extend Unai Emery's contract at a time where the team were underperforming and the metrics demonstrated as much. And, you know, they went on a pretty disastrous run towards the end of the season. I think that, for a lot of people, was the first big alarm bell ringing. Arsenal had a pretty extraordinary summer transfer window for a club that went in saying they had no money. You know, we know what went on with We Care To You and everything. The club ended up, you know, signing Nicola Pepe for a club record fee, albeit one that was structured, you know, in a temporal sense, in a way that was favourably. That price tag raised a lot of eyebrows in the Premier League. Clubs who had spoken to Lille about the player, not just 12 months prior when he was worth, I think, less than half that, but even a couple of months prior to Arsenal doing that deal, believed that they could attain him for a lower fee. So, yeah, I think that is a concern. And obviously, actually, I mean, if Pepe arrives and scores 30 goals this season, probably no one ever questions that, you know? But I think looking at the player, we've all thought, okay, good player, but we overpaid there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the information that's been doing the rounds is that we overpaid in a considerable way, not just a little bit, but quite a lot. And I think we should point out that that shouldn't be a reflection on Nicolas Pepe at all. You know, it's not his fault what the club paid for him. If that raised expectations, that's not on him either. So, you know.
Yeah, and Lille were in a really interesting financial situation where they basically had to make that amount of money almost exactly in order to get themselves out of some trouble they were going to be in with French financial regulations. They basically needed about 70 million for Pepe to make themselves financially
that's
viable.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And they found it. They found it. And you know, from what we understand, Napoli were also in the mix and sort of prepared to pay around that mark too. But I do think that must have rung alarm bells. And not just the deal, but I think the manner in which the deal was done, some of the intermediaries who were used to get that deal over the line. You know, I don't think any of that sat right. And so you're right in that while this has sort of felt like it's come very quickly in terms of 6 weeks since Tim Lewis arrived, 10 days since Raul Sinieri's statement about the redundancies, it also has been brewing for quite a long time as well.
Yeah, look, people inside the club I know have been concerned about some of the things that have been going on, the sort of unfettered access between Sanyehi and the ownership. I mean, when Emery was there, there was no line of communication. You do wonder why Sanyehi was so keen to extend Emery and why he was so keen to give him a chance when earlier this season or earlier last season it became very apparent that things were going terribly wrong. You know, you put in place someone like Mikel Arteta and maybe from there things start to unravel a little bit, because Arteta is somebody who's got a strength of character and who's got a connection now with Josh Kroenke, lines of communication to Josh Kroenke, etc., etc. I mean, there are just, when you look back on the various deals that we've done, and the way perhaps some of those deals have come about, that would make you, I guess, there's sort of a weight of evidence in inverted commas, if you like, that just makes you concerned, or would have made you concerned about the way things were going. Like, I wonder what happened with Lauren Koscielny last summer. Why did we not make a decision on him when we knew what he wanted to do, what was going on with him, how unhappy he was? You know, I know people might look at the way that he behaved and say that's not acceptable, and I'm not making any excuses for it. I think you have to look at why a guy who has been super professional for Arsenal for 9 years acted out in the way that he did.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, basically what you realise here is that it's not been a good 3 years for Arsenal Football Club. And you can look for the smoking gun, but actually you don't really need one to make an assessment on Raoul Sénier's time as head of football. It's been a period in which Arsenal haven't been brilliantly governed. And, you know, I think that's putting it pretty kindly. I mean, it's been a period of decline. And there are so many different factors that input to that. And you can cite Koscielny, you can cite Pepe, you can cite the relationships with agents, you can cite our Premier League performance, you can cite continued faith in Unai Emery in spring of last year and then in autumn of last year when he was drastically underperforming. You know, you can cite bringing Denis Suarez in on loan. You know, you don't need to find something super dodgy to look at it and say, well, this wasn't going well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. And people will say, look, the decline had set in before that. And I think that's true.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question that you know, we spent a couple of years at least under Arsene Wenger worrying about the direction of the club and where we were going and performance levels and all that kind of stuff. So it's not as if this is just under Sanyehi's watch or this is all to do with him. But he did really, if you look at the performance levels, he didn't do anything to arrest the decline. And in fact, this season, we finished eighth, just scraped into eighth on the last day of the Premier League season. We were facing the prospect of no European football for the first time in 25 years. You know, so from those, even a basic performance level, you have to look at the work that he did and say he didn't do a particularly good job.
Well, I think you've got to judge people by the standards that they sort of set for themselves. If they set certain targets, I think you've got to measure them against that. And if you look at the things that Sanier was on record about, things like we can outsmart the market, things like we won't allow players to go beyond 2 years of their contract remaining, you know, we will sign or sell at that point. By his own deliverables that he set up, he has failed. So I think even sort of setting aside, you know, all the speculation and discussion as to, you know, how exactly Arsenal has been run in recent months, I think it's very easy to look at it and say this wasn't going well. And I think that doesn't mean that he did nothing good. You know, I think when we look back at Sané's tenure, we might look at signings like Kieran Tierney or Gabriel Martinelli and think they were positives.
Yeah.
But the weight of evidence, the balance, I think to me suggests that, you know, this was not particularly healthy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you're right to point out that not everything he did was bad. But I think the legacy that he leaves is not at all positive. You know, I think there are some good aspects to some of the signings we made. Tierney, Martinelli, maybe Pepe, depending on what he does next season. But, you know, overall, I don't think it was a healthy situation. I don't think it was healthy for the club. I do wonder quite how much damage has been done and how long it will take to fix it in terms of the way we're going to operate from a recruitment point of view. And I think we've got some questions on that. So we'll leave that for the moment. But when you look at what happened with the Tim Lewis appointment, and within 6 weeks, Raoul Sénier, he is gone.
Mm-hmm.
it doesn't really add up to me that this was an amicable parting of the ways. I mean, I think some of the spin that's doing the rounds, you know, has been ridiculous. The idea that Raul was concerned about the 55 job losses and that's why he decided to go, you know, it just does not add up. There are things we can say and things we can't say. And there are things that people need to look at and make their own minds up on. But I think when the ownership appoint a non-executive director to examine all aspects of the club, and all of a sudden, right at the start of the transfer window, when you need your head of football, when he's directly involved in a lot of the work that you're going to be doing at this time, for him to be out the door like that, suggests that this is more than just a mutual decision to go separate ways.
This is my opinion, but you don't sack, and I use that word deliberately, your chief executive essentially on a Saturday morning because a hamster has tweeted about it.
A gerbil,
apologies, unless something pretty serious has gone down.
Yeah.
You don't foreground Raul in the redundancy announcement, I don't think, unless you're thinking he's going to be there for some time. I really do think that the dramatic acceleration of this from Tim Lewis's appointment, from the redundancy announcement to the announcement that Raul was leaving, you know, suggests that there was a catalyst in that. And, I mean, we reported this on The Athletic this morning, but this doesn't happen without Tim Lewis. And people are quite clear on that. And that's not because, I'm not trying to say that Tim Lewis is our saviour and some glorious white knight, but what he is someone who the Cronkies listen to. And actually, some of the grievances and some of the issues around Sanjay have been held by what we would call the traditional board for some time, but those messages have not been heard. And I think Tim Lewis's presence in London created a bridge, essentially, between the board, restored some power to the board, and played a part in what's happened and unfolded in recent days.
Yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. I've gone blank here now.
That's fine. It's quite complicated because you're sort of trying to think what you can say.
Yeah, I mean, I think you referenced the David O'Leary situation. And, I'm not saying that David O'Leary is the guy that we need at board level, but he was a guy who the traditional board wanted to appoint to the executive board or the executive committee. And that was blocked by Raul Sanjay. My understanding of that was the reasoning behind that was, like, O'Leary has a lot of football experience, even if in recent years he hasn't been managing. But, you know, he is the club's record appearance holder. He has plenty of experience in management and in the game, but also somebody who would provide a measure of oversight into what was going on at various levels of the club. And that was blocked. And look, you know, if you have some power in an organization, the last thing you want to do is give it away or dilute it. So I see it from Sanjay's point of view. But I do think that, you know, KSE's duty was maybe to give that greater consideration at the time rather than allow it to be just dismissed because of the sort of trust that they had in Raul. And I think some of that comes from the fact that he was recommended very highly to them by Ivan Gazidis, who they had a great deal of faith in. Ivan, who, what is the opposite of King Midas in the sense that everything you touch turns to shit? you know, but this is what I mean about the way things have been run. And it's just like, well, Ivan says Raul is good, therefore Raul is good. We trust Raul and let him get on with it because we're the distant owners and we don't know that much about football. So we'll put our trust in the experts that we have in place, that we trust in because, well, Ivan said, and he must be a good guy. Look, he worked at Barcelona. He knows his shit, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, that, because I feel like you don't want owners that interfere. Do you know what I mean? You don't want owners that tell people what to do. You want the experts to be given the bandwidth to operate to the best of their capabilities. I suppose it's the recruitment process, isn't it?
It's your experts have got to be good experts. Your experts have got to be the best in class, if you like. You know, look at the processes, look at how you hire, look at how you appoint people to key positions. And I think this is something that, you know, will come up maybe with Vinay and his progression. And maybe it is a good progression from a career point of view, but you can understand why people might have a few concerns in that regard.
And just to say, I do think one of the sort of subplots of this, as I just touched on, is that the, you know, the conventional structure of owner, board, executive committee had been kind of subverted a little bit at Arsenal, as far as I could see, in recent seasons, where the power pretty much all lay with the executive and the board's role, it had become almost ceremonial. And I do think that what's happened here, you know, crucially, Rao wasn't appointed to the board when it was restructured, unlike Ivan Gazidis, who was a board member. And then adding Tim Lewis to that board, giving a level of oversight, giving a direct relationship with the Cronkies, I think it has restored a little bit of that hierarchy. And I think that that is actually an incredibly healthy thing. And to their credit, you know, the Arsenal Supporters Trust, for example, have been advocating for a stronger board for quite a long time. And I think in this decision, we are seeing the benefit of that. And it's quite a dramatic turnaround from Sir Chips basically walking out because he felt he didn't really have a say in things.
Yeah. I mean, do you view this as a kind of opportunity in a way? I wrote about it today in the sense that, you know, KSE have always been this kind of distant, hands-off owner, because when they took over, when they first got involved, Wenger was producing top four and everything was going up. You know, TV money was going up, broadcast money, gate revenue, commercial revenue, all those things were going up. We were top four. Like, why would you poke your nose in if you don't have the expertise to do that? Like, what could Stan Kroenke come along and contribute, you know, from a footballing perspective? Not very much. Mm. And, you know, if you're dealing with somebody like Arsene Wenger, who is, you know, whatever you think of him, an amazing orator, an amazing speaker, a very convincing talker when he speaks about football, when he speaks about the game, when he speaks about how things should work and, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're Stan and you're sort of enthralled to this man with encyclopedic knowledge of football, you're not going to get involved, really. And then Ivan was there and they sort of got more involved, etc., etc. And then, you know, when Ivan left, they made this decision to go with the two-headed approach with Raul and Vinay. And I'm not sure that was the right decision at the time. I think that created this sort of power vacuum in a way, which has caused some of the problems that we've seen, right? So yeah. So now, though, having had this eye-opening experience that maybe some of the people who you think are great are not that great, or maybe the people who you've put in place to run Arsenal Football Club in the best interests of Arsenal Football Club have maybe been sidetracked a little bit along the way, that what you want from them and what they're delivering are not necessarily the same things, right? So do you think in some ways there's an opportunity here for KSE to sort of say, okay, right, well, we've been hands off and we're still not going to come in and be like the owners, and we're going to, what's the word I'm going to use here? Micromanage every aspect of the football club. They still need to put in place the right people to run the football club. But do you think they might change the way, or at least consider how they put those people in place?
I hope so. I always remember someone who worked at Arsenal once said to me, I think I was slagging the Cronkies off or something like that, and they said, the Cronkies are really good owners if they've got the right people there. Which, you know, I know people will take exception to that, but I think it's an interesting point. Like, they will let people run the club. It's just absolutely essential that those people are the right people. And I think they need to, I mean, to sort of push on with what I was saying, if I was them, I would be strengthening the board further. I don't know if it would be David O'Leary or someone else, but I would be bringing in people who are on the ground, especially given the sort of geographic problems of, you know, Josh and Stan not being physically present at all in London at the moment. I'd be providing more oversight there, and I'd be letting those people, you know, feed into kind of executive recruitment.
Yeah,
as required. And I would make sure that top-down structure was in place so that as the owner, you know, I could exert my influence and have the board there to kind of safeguard and manage the company. I mean, that seems straightforward and obvious to me. And I think that while I'm pleased this change has been made, I have to be honest, I am pleased about it. I don't think it absolves KSE. And I think something they're a little bit guilty of is just being too slow in a lot of cases. And, you know, this has happened now. It's come to a head now. But maybe, as we sort of started out by saying, it should have come to a head earlier. It's really funny because Raoul's personal statement, which I'm sure you've read, which did the rounds on social media, kind of blamed COVID for his departure. And while I don't think that's true at all, in a funny way, without COVID, it doesn't happen. Because without COVID, Arsenal aren't in such dire financial straits that they need to bring someone in to overlook the accounts, make sure everything's in order. And, you know, nor do they probably put someone on the board to talk to them because they can probably fly to London and back. So it has weirdly taken this kind of freak set of circumstances for the ownership to intervene.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it depends how you look at it, or how you look at the appointment of Tim Lewis. Is it because things are so bad at the moment and, you know, every aspect of the club has to be analysed to the nth degree? Or was it in some ways like like I said earlier, weight of so-called evidence, things that weren't adding up that needed to be looked at and needed to be addressed. Some of the relationships, maybe. Some of the deals that we'd done, it just became impossible not to say, well, maybe there's nothing untoward going on here. And I'm not saying there was anything untoward going on, but this is something we need to have a look at. Oh, we've had a look at it, and now the head of football is gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but to my mind, that's still too late. That's all. I still think, you know, these discussions were happening long before Tim Lewis arrived, you know?
Yeah.
So in that respect, I'm glad that the ownership have acted. And clearly, I think this does come from the ownership. I mean, Arsenal are effectively on record about that. You know, Vinay can't sack Raoul. It has to come from the very, very top. Or can't ask Raoul to leave, however you want to put it.
Mutual decision, of course.
Of course, yeah, incredibly mutual. But it's really interesting. I mean, I have spoken to quite a few people who think Stan himself would have taken, would not have taken kindly to the way the club was being perceived. Because while you can't buy class, you can buy a club that has certain intrinsic values and a certain reputation. And when that is tarnished, it is not good for you or your investment.
Yeah, look, I mean, it depends how you interpret that. Like, the 55 job losses that obviously were sanctioned by KSE, how does that fit into your class?
Very true.
You know, so it works both ways there. But look, Raoul is gone. That's it from him, and I'm glad. And I think we need to move forward, and I think we've got a better chance of moving forward without him. So I'm feeling positive about that. And I just have a question here, because we'll move on just to talk a little bit about Edu and Arteta, because they now have a bit more responsibility. AFC Met says, are Arsenal now structurally set up well for the future? Technical director and head coach working in tandem for players. Only one CEO at the head of the club now. It seems clearer. So in terms of like an operational structure, you know, there isn't quite the same dilution, you know, between the business side of the club that I think Vinay is still going to be operating and have the most responsibility for. I think he even said in the statement, the interview he did yesterday, that Edu and Arteta are the are the experts. You know, obviously decisions have to be made at board level, but they're going to be the ones who are driving the footballing decisions, whether that's playing style, recruitment, all of the things that we are invested in as football fans. That's going to be their purview now. So how do you view it from that point of view before we get into the individuals involved?
I think it's definitely a more streamlined structure. I can't really talk about it without talking about the individuals, I have to be honest, because okay. I have a nagging worry, to be honest, that, I mean, people could probably guess what I'm going to say, but when Edu arrived, I was very full of hope. Do you remember on this podcast, but me basically saying that for things to work out,
yeah.
he had to be brilliant and he had to effectively be sensational at his job. I have some concerns about his capacity to do that. And I think that if one of the concerns with Sanier, he was, for example, the close links with certain agents, I don't think you've solved that problem as long as Edu is still in place.
I think it's reasonable to have some concerns on that level, for sure. And I think it's also reasonable to have some concerns about, you know, the work that he's going to do and has done. Whether, you know, if you're being really kind, you might say that he's only been able to operate in as far as Raul has allowed him to operate. Which is, you know, maybe that's true, maybe that's not. Maybe he could have been stronger. I do think, I mean, if I were the owners, certainly I would have some concerns about the relationship with Kia. I don't know if people, not everyone who's listening to this will have been listening to the Arsenal Vision podcast over the weekend. Tim Stillman did a nice bit on Edu. I think it's for one of their Patreon pods. And he laid out some stuff about Edu, which would give you a bit more faith about him in terms of, you know, what he can do if he is allowed and the kind of things that he can do from a footballing perspective. But I would say this, I would say that he has got a lot to prove. There's going to be a lot of focus and a lot of spotlight on him, isn't there, over the coming weeks and months, because there's now a huge amount of responsibility on him to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I have to say as well, I think Hasfami is a name we will hear more about in the coming weeks and months, because his role becomes pretty critical, I'd say, at this stage.
What is his role?
So he is a contract negotiator, contract specialist who came from Team Sky. What is interesting is that in certain negotiations of late, for example, Aubameyang's contract, he hasn't been doing them. It was Raul Sanyehi who was leading those talks, which shows you, I think, that his role is not sufficiently defined, and maybe he's not been granted quite the freedom. You know, Raul was a guy who was very hands-on, should we put it like that? I think that Hasfami's role is really important, because I think in a technical director model, it is dangerous when the guy choosing the players is the same as the guy negotiating for the players. I think that if you can create a separation between the technical and the financial, it leaves itself a lot less open to bad things.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion about how you should run a football club.
Sure, I think that makes a lot of sense.
And so I think, you know, if Edu's job is to, if Mikel's job is, I need a right back, and Edu's is, how about this right back? And at that point, someone like us or similarly qualified takes over and handles the financial dimension of that within the parameters that are set by Edu and Vinay or whoever it might be.
Mm.
That strikes me as healthier, shall we say?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Again, could you make the argument that maybe the person in that role has been somewhat restricted in terms of how they can operate? If he is the chief contract negotiator, why is our head of football negotiating a contract with our best player?
You know, because ultimately, yeah, he's junior to Raul in those situations, or has been. And so I think if we're going to be fair to Edu and we're going to be fair to Huss, I think, you know, they have to be given this opportunity to prove themselves. And wow, I mean, they've landed right in the middle of an opportunity of sorts, in that we are at the outset of a transfer window. And it will be, there's a hell of a lot of work to be done at Arsenal. I mean, it's not just buying players and selling players, you know, in this window. There are, I think, 14 players whose contracts expire in the next 2 years. Arsenal have an enormous amount of work to get through. And it will be fascinating to see how much that's impeded by Raul's departure, how much they can pick up the slack. Clearly, they feel internally they have the appropriate people to do so. Let's hope they're granted a bit more authority and we can make a better judgment on them. Just on, you know, the Edu thing, I heard Tim Stillman's thing, and I've written about it as well, about Edu in Brazil with Kia. That is a relationship that goes way, 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 way back. That is not Raul's relationship. That's something that came to the table, you know, via Edu primarily. They've got so much history that if anyone has a concern about that, and I know there are varying degrees of concern, some people do not care at all. But if you do, Edu either has to sort of shape up on that front, or it will just continue.
Well, look, I mean, I think the optics of what happens over the next few weeks will be crucial. I don't know if you can do any more deals for Kia Jurabchian players without it raising...
Surely Edu's smart enough to know that, right?
Yeah, surely. And look, you know, we spoke earlier about contract negotiations, and, you know, one of the things that Sanjay, he said he was going to improve was contract management at Arsenal. Mm. Players who were getting into the final year of their contract, the final 2 years of their contract, you know, players leaving for free, all of those kinds of things. Again, if you're being kind, you would say it's because of the influence of Sanjay that they haven't improved. So again, if there's spotlight on Huss Fahmy or whoever's going to be dealing with contracts, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Are we going to hand out extensions? Are we going to move players on? Are we, you know, I mean,
as for Arteta, by the way, I think this really just strengthens his position. And I think that, you know, the club really recognise they've got something a bit special there. And this will only increase his authority.
Mm. I mean, he is more and more, and I've said this previously on the show, he is more and more the Arsenal manager than the head coach.
Increasingly, yes. And I think that was quite clear early on, that he was going to be that kind of guy who wanted authority in these situations. But, I mean, literally the sort of hierarchy is kind of being rejigged and restructured accordingly, where, you know, there are less other voices on the football side and his voice grows louder. And ultimately, I think he will be the defining factor in what happens to Edu. I really do. Like, if he says, I love Edu, I think he's great, then Edu's probably safe. If he goes, oh, I've actually got a mate who I think would be a brilliant technical director, then Edu should be worried.
Yeah, well, look, that's not the way we should be appointing a technical director either. If we decide Edu's not the right guy, just because Mikel Arteta likes somebody isn't the reason we should give him the job, you know? That's kind of part of why we are where we are right now. So that's what I'm talking about when it comes to processes and putting in place the right kind of structures and the right people in the right areas. but yeah, I mean, what do you think Arteta is going to be... How do you think he's going to be feeling about all this? I have a suspicion that he'll be quite pleased with the way events have played out. You know, obviously it strengthens his own hand, as you said, and gives him power. But I just feel like the way he talks about football and the way he talks about the culture and the way he talks about the way things should be done didn't really tally completely with the way things were being done.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, he's going to have more of a say now, and I think he'll value that. It wouldn't surprise me if he's having a little bit of a freak out just at the timing. I do wonder if he's like, oh God, we're in a massive transfer window for this club. How disruptive is this going to be? It would be weird if he didn't worry about that, right? I mean, Raul was across a number of negotiations for the club Aubameyang, you know, but there are others too. I mean, Gabriel, Partey. So, you know, that would be a worry. But I think in the long run, I think generally it will be to his benefit. And I think that he can probably recognise that. And I'm fascinated to see how it will change Arsenal's approach to recruitment, you know, to what degree that diversifies at this point.
Do you think it's better that if you have a manager or a head coach that you really believe in, his involvement in the recruitment, as opposed to somebody who just gets given players, seems like a more logical way to operate, if you like, doesn't it? If, like, Mikel Arteta, like, we've done the Pepe Zaha thing before, like, Emery wanted this and they gave him that, you know. It feels like Arteta wants specific things, and if he's more involved in the individuals that are coming in rather than simply positions, does that not give him a better chance of succeeding?
I don't know. I mean, it's a really interesting one. We wrote about this again this morning where, you know, people close to the club have talked about how Arsenal worked really hard to move away from a kind of Wenger-ish manager model. And now they seem to be headed back there.
Yeah, maybe the first iteration of it didn't work. And maybe, you know, it didn't really work when you look at the performance. You know, to do it the way we were doing it, like, you have the coach gets the players, you work with the players, that's who you're getting, it's your job to get the best out of those players. But if a coach plays a certain style of football and you don't give him the players to play that style of football, there's only so much culpability a coach has in terms of performance levels.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is the synergy between the coach and the technical director. I actually think that's the crucial component. I mean, Pep Guardiola, you know, has people in that position above him. You know, he is the coach of Man City, but they have a very shared vision of what a Manchester City player looks like. And he's, you know, important in those discussions. I do think that the model can work. I think what remains to be seen is Edu the guy to dovetail with Arteta on it? And
yeah,
it's really hard to say from where we are. They are incredibly complimentary about each other in a public forum, but then they're likely to be, aren't they?
Yeah, just like the departure of Raul Sanyehi was an amicable mutual decision taken by all parties. You know,
I mean, look, yeah, I think that they are, they have, you know, collaborated relatively well from what I understand. So thus far, so maybe it will blossom into a beautiful thing. That's what Arsenal need to happen.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think people will have perhaps more faith in Arteta because of what he's done. Winning a trophy in his first season has you know, given him a great deal of leverage, authority, or faith. You know, and I think that's right. When you achieve things, you know, people are going to have some faith in you. I do think the jury is out a little bit on Edu, but it would be great for Arsenal. It would be great for us if, you know, that relationship between Arteta and Edu was a really good one from a recruitment point of view, from, you know, putting in place the structures at the football club that hopefully will see us well into the future. You know, but look, things happen in football and things fall apart in football. You look at what's going on at Barcelona, for example, at the moment, and, you know, this is one of the biggest clubs in the world. It's an absolute mess. So, you know, things can change pretty quickly.
He'll walk into a job.
Yes. Yeah. He'll go in there and sort that right out.
Timing's good for him.
He'll go in there and sort that right out. All he needs is to sign David Luiz, Cedric Suarez, and William.
We can do him a deal.
Yeah, we'll do him
a
deal.
We can get him a good price on those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating with Edu. And, like, I wish him all the best. I just because he played for Arsenal, you know, I don't want to give him a free ride in this scenario. And I think, yeah, the jury, as you say, is very, very much out right now.
Yeah. Well, look, it's all there to prove. And hopefully, you know, he can step up and you know, rise to the challenge, if you like. Because he has been, willingly or otherwise, I don't know, very much in the shadows. But there's no hiding place now, given everything that's going on and given the importance of the role that he has at the club. You know, like you said, we need him to be good. We need him to be good.
We need him to be real good, yeah. We haven't even talked about the signing. that we made.
Who was that?
I can't remember.
When was that? So much has happened.
Yeah, I don't know, years ago, many years ago. Should we do that in part two?
Yeah, let's do it in part two. Yeah, this is a long part one. We're at 50 minutes now, more or less, so we'll do that. Okay, we will take a break, and we'll come back with your questions and more in part two, including some Willy Ann stuff, right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog, and on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. And we don't really have a Willy Ann specific question, James.
Everyone's forgotten about him.
Everyone's kind of forgotten. I enjoyed the little snippet of information that was in your article this morning on The Athletic about how the Willy Ann signing actually took place at the home of Kia Jurabchin, which is, even with the COVID situation, kind of extraordinary.
Yes, ordinarily those things would take place on an Arsenal premises. And yeah, the kind of reasoning we were given was that it was COVID related and there was an outdoor space available. But, you know, there are other outdoor spaces in the world. So, yeah, I did find that quite interesting and a clear sign, I think, of sort of how comfortable and cozy, shall we say, some of the relationships have become. And I find that concerning, and I know a lot of people around the club found it concerning too, and it wouldn't surprise me if things like that played into the decision that was made over the weekend. As for the player themselves, funnily enough, I'd sort of only, just
there's
about...
there's only one of him.
Sorry. I had sort of just about got my head round it from a technical perspective before all this blew up. I mean, I do have my concerns about the length of the contract, and I do wonder what Willian might look like in year three of that pocket. Grey hair, I imagine. That beautiful hair, all grey. But I do think he will improve us substantially in the very short term. I think he's better than what we've got for next season. What do you think?
Pretty much the same. Like, Arsenal giving a 32-year-old a three-year deal is almost unprecedented. I cannot remember the last time a 32-year-old player got a three-year deal?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this because I was when Jens Lehmann signed, I don't know how long his contract was. I think it might have been 3 years. I mean, Petr Cech would be one as well, who I think got a three-year deal.
Our goalkeepers, but these are all goalkeepers.
I'm trying to think of outfield players, and it's very difficult to say. I cannot actually think of one. Arsene Wenger was so opposed to it, wasn't it? He'd get the occasional golden oldie in on a sort of short-term deal.
I mean, we did it with Stefan Lichtsteiner, for example, where you know he came in on a free transfer, but it was a year. And maybe we had an option and, you know, but I can't remember any outfield player of that age getting that kind of a deal before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember how old Oleg Luzhny was when he joined. I think he was only in his late 20s. So, yeah, it's a very long contract. But I have to say, I think I've been a bit unfair on Willian as a player. I think he's much better than I had given him credit, and it's because I don't watch Chelsea very much and I don't watch Brazil, but speaking to lots of different people who have seen more of him, you know, the opinion seems to be, and the stats seem to bear out, he is a good player.
Yeah, I think he's a good player. I don't have any doubt that he can contribute to us next season. I just feel like in the overall scheme of things, in the wider context of the whole Kia relationship thing, which we had concerns about and which I'm sure played a part in the departure of Sanjay, the age, our inability or difficulty in moving players on when they get to a certain age. We've already got some of those situations going on at the club right now. I just wonder why you would potentially inflict another one on yourself, unless there is some sort of, I mean, there's no assured exit plan, is there, of Willian after 18 months or 2 years? You know, some of the markets that you might have said, okay, could he go to China? In the COVID world, is that really an option? Is that what's going to happen? I don't know. So,
and he wanted to stay in London. I mean, that's why he's moved to Arsenal. Because he's very happy here. I mean, one thing you can say about Kier, his track record at moving his clients on from Chelsea wasn't too bad. He did it pretty successfully. Hopefully there's something
one,
like that.
One of them just came to us.
Yeah, he's still doing it.
He's still at it, fucking hell.
The thing is, this is why I think the discussion about the sort of manager versus head coach model is interesting, because I think it's pretty clear from what we've learned and from what he said publicly, Mikel Arteta really likes Willian as a player and wanted a player like that. I think so. Where, if a technical director model is functioning properly, the way that should sort of play out is that Arteta goes, "I want Willian," and then because his view as a head coach is short term, and that was how Raul Sinier put it. It was like his you know, he's looking at the short term. I want to win the next game, basically. As the technical director, it's your responsibility to say, well, I have to take more of a mid to long term view of this team's progress. I have to look at the next 5 years, not the next five games. And so it's their responsibility really to say, this is not a sensible deal for this club.
Right. But do you think, honestly, that the Willian deal came about because Mikel Arteta specifically said, I want Willian, get me Willian on a three-year deal? Or was it a case that he was asked, would you like Willian? We can get you him pretty easily.
I think it's probably the latter, but I don't think Arteta... I suppose what I'm saying is, in his job description as it stands, it's not Arteta's job to care if it's 3 years or not. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of not his problem. That is the job of the technical director, to make a decision on whether the length of contract and the amount it's going to cost the club is appropriate. And that's another reason that I have my nagging doubts.
Well,
there.
I would suggest, and I will happily be proved wrong on this, but I would imagine the contract length for Willian was more to do with Sanjay than Edu. I would say.
I think, okay, maybe. But then he's not been doing his job.
We come back to the issue of whether he's allowed to have that kind of input. Right?
All I can say is I think that's generous. I think we might be affording Edu a bit of generosity there.
Maybe so, but I mean, do you think who made the decision to give Cedric Suarez a 4-year deal? Was it Edu? Was it Sagné? Was it the pair of them? Was it the three of them? Did they have a nice, you know, picnic on Hampstead
Heath? Probably.
And
I mean, I can't say, obviously, you know, officially, I don't know. But I don't think, I've never, ever, at any point, had any suggestion from the club that Edu and Sanyehi weren't on the same page.
Mm.
I've never, ever heard anything to say, yeah, Edu's furious about Cedric Suarez getting this many years. No way. Not anything like it.
Mm.
Been presented with a completely united front. So you may be right, and maybe Edu is incredibly conscientious about the club's money and where it goes and is wary of giving these longer deals to younger people, to older players, and has just been steamrolled by Real Sanyehi.
Well, I only meant that in terms of the seniority that Sanyehi had. Like, it was Sanyehi who brought Edu to the club.
Well, you know, let me tell you this. If Sanyehi was not stopping Edu doing those things, or if, you know, no one's stopping him now. Vinay's not going to go, I think that should be a 2-year deal, actually, mate. Do you know what I mean? So,
well, somebody should be. Somebody. Well, this is a gap. This is a problem.
Well, no, to my mind, that's Edu's job. He is a director of the club.
Sure.
He
sure,
has
okay.
to protect the, you know, the, like I say, the mid-term prospects and Huss as well is involved in this, but balance the financial dimension. It is alarming, shall we say, that decision was made. I say that knowing that Willian is here, and I'm actually excited to watch Willian play. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be good next year, for sure. I think he's better than what we've got. But I'm still worried about how that deal came to pass.
I think that's fair. I have a question here. It comes from our Discord. And it says, it's from Kieran E, who says, goodly morning to you, Kieran. He says, if we don't have a scouting network and we don't have Sanyehi's little black book, what does this mean for transfers in the short/mid-term? And I think it's worth pointing out as well that, you know, one of the things and one of the concerns that people have had is the marginalization of A, the scouting network, but B, the data side of our recruitment. Pretty much everybody was marginalized. So we don't have scouts. The data guys are pissed off. The head of football is now gone. You know, what are we doing now in terms of how we recruit? And I think the other thing to point out as well is that if we're going to be critical, or if we're going to give, not give him a pass, but if we're going to point out that Sanyehi, his job wasn't to run a football club, it was to do deals that other people were going to put in place. That was him. He was a fixer, you know, that guy. Mm-hmm. Edu is not a talent spotter. That's not his role. He's an administrator. He's like, he's close to the squad. He spends time around them. He's like a liaison officer in some respects.
Operations. And he manages the staff as well. He has a close relationship with all the staff.
So that's kind of his job. So who's out there looking for the players and identifying the talent? Is that not, as it stands, if we're talking about the structures and the new structures that we might put in place, the biggest gap in the current setup?
Chief Scout Kia, surely, solves that problem. Now, I think, look, clearly it's a bizarre situation Arsenal find themselves in. Having effectively dismissed their entire scouting team, it is strange. Now, I appreciate there are factors that make scouting, particularly in person, more difficult at the moment in this COVID landscape. I recognise that. But Arsenal do need to identify talent. And it may not be in this window, you know, but they may know who they want in this window. In fact, we understand they do want know who they want in this window. It's going forward. I mean, a lot of work has gone into Arsenal's talent identification department for kind of 17 to 23 year olds, kind of development players. That has been something that Edu has kind of evolved. You know, there were a lot of changes at that level with Steve Morrow moving on and others, but he has brought other people in, promoted other people. There is an emphasis on video scouting, I understand, at that level. I do wonder if he's going to try and replicate that in the first team, but that is a process. It takes time, and we will have to wait and see. I mean, it's not going to happen in this window. That is for sure. Arsenal will be going on reports they already have, targets they already have.
Where did they come from?
Well, a mixture of places, but certainly some of them, the scouting department. I mean, you know, we've reported that Thomas Partey was recommended by the scouting department, watched personally by Francis Cagigao in Spain many, many, many times. Gabriel of Lille is another player who was highly recommended by the outgoing scouts. So, you know, clearly there was a reliance on that facility.
I wonder,
even if it wasn't central to the plan.
Sure. I wonder, do Lille need £30 million this summer? I wonder, is that it? No.
Maybe. I mean, you know, we understand that's a very real prospect, that deal. So, and you know, I can get behind that. I think he looks like an interesting player, and he is the right kind of age profile. He's sort of 23, 24, you know, athletic, great. But it will be fascinating to see how Arsenal go about this recruitment process. It's Edu's baby now. I mean, there's no one else's voice really in there to contest him. Mm. He can make of it what he wants. So I suppose if we're having this conversation about Edu saying, well, we don't know much about him, you know, what's he actually done? What can he take responsibility for? In 6 to 12 months' time, we will be in a far better position to make that judgment.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a guarantee.
It does feel like maybe if you're looking at it positively, a slate has been wiped clean to an extent, and now there's a chance to rebuild. You know,
even though I'm sort of, you know, expressing these concerns, I am prepared to sort of have an open mind about it and say, right, come on then, Edu, let's see what you've got. And I do think that drawing a line under the way the recruitment process was being run by removing Sanjay, as we said earlier, Edu's not stupid. He has to realise, you know, what is going to be acceptable within these parameters. And if that means an agent you've got a really close relationship has the right player for you, and they are the right price on the right length of contract, then by all means, go and do it. Mm. But if not, don't. Mm. Should be straightforward, really, doesn't it? It makes it sound very simple when you put it like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've sorted it all out.
Yeah. Let's have a look for another question. I was interested by this question. Guru Twitter, who's at Pradeep Kachala, says, Tim Lewis is a lawyer who specialises in sales and acquisitions of companies. Is there any chance he's gearing up the club for a sale, hence his appointment?
I was literally going to ask you a similar question from the Facebook from Kevin McOwen, right, who says, does the appointment of a mergers and acquisitions expert, Tim Lewis, to seemingly clean up the club and make it leaner not indicate that the Cronkies are preparing to sell the club? I hadn't considered that. I don't know definitively, but I do feel like his appointment was basically putting somebody that they trust in at ground level to be their eyes and ears on the ground, because they had concerns about the way things were going, and they needed somebody they could trust to come back to them and report what was going on, or to dismiss some of the things that they had heard, or confirm some of the things that they had heard, whatever it might be. I feel like it was that more than trying to sell the club. But I mean, nothing would surprise me at this point. But I don't think from everything that they've said, they are actively trying to do that at this moment in time. I could be wrong.
No, nor do I. And I've heard nothing to suggest that. If I was being talking in a sort of speculative fashion, I would say if the Cronkies had to sell an asset, I do wonder if Arsenal might be the one, given that it's outside of the US. It probably, I mean, think of the headache it causes us. Imagine the headache it causes them. I do wonder if, and you know, what's happening in terms of slimming the company down, you know, that could be seen as lining it up for a takeover. But I haven't heard anything to that effect. And, you know, we always have to look at the Cronkies' track record here, which is that they don't sell their franchises, if you'll forgive the word. So, yeah, I'm not so sure, but it would be... It's not a bad theory, though, is it? I mean, it's a decent shout.
Yeah, I mean...
The questions.
Yeah, particularly at the moment when there are financial implications in the big stadium in LA that's, you know, way over budget.
Exactly.
And if there are financial pressures, then certainly Arsenal is probably the most valuable one outside of the LA Rams. You know, maybe I could be wrong about some of the American ones. Maybe they would just deliver more because of the way that American sports operate. But, you know, this is one which would allow them, if they were to sell, for example, they could consolidate all their efforts within the US rather than have to keep looking across the Atlantic. So, look, wait and see. But I don't think that's why they appointed Tim Lewis. I think it was more to do with looking at what was happening and seeing what needed to happen. And I think what happened at the weekend was something that needed to happen. We have a question here from the Discord from Cluck the Rotisserie Chicken, who says, does it give you any assurance that Vinay has been at the club for 10 years, as he repeatedly pointed out in his interview? Does that qualify him for Arsenal DNA? And do you think he might be more motivated to progress the club than Sanyehi, who was a Barcelona man?
I don't think that that should matter massively. In terms of, you know, the fact that Sanyehi was from Barcelona, I don't think is what led to his it not working out particularly. As I said earlier, I think there might have been a bit of a culture clash. I mean, Vinay will understand the culture of the club and I think maybe will have success in terms of managing up and managing down as a consequence of that. But this is a huge role for him now. It was a big role before. It's even bigger now. I think everyone thinks he's a great guy. I think people think he's very astute. But like everyone else in this new setup, he is still being assessed, right? And the jury kind of has to be out. I did like his interview, I have to say. I thought what he said about, you know, the club improving the way they communicate with fans was promising and shows an awareness, I think, of some of the problems that have existed between the club and its supporters. So I'm encouraged by that. And, you know, yeah, he's got a pretty clean slate in my book. So we'll see what we get. I mean, it's difficult for me to sort of say more definitively than that, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know either. Like you, everyone I speak to about him says he's a good guy and they have a lot of respect for him. You know, he's quite young still. You might wonder if he's got the authority or the gravitas, you know, to be that guy, to fulfill that role. And I suppose if we're going to have concerns about Edu, given his proximity to the previous setup, Vinay was part of that as well. So I can understand why people would have some doubts. I mean, I sort of expect a few more appointments to be made.
In what sort of areas?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if we might appoint somebody in an ambassadorial role to the board. Like you said earlier, the AST have been championing greater inclusivity and greater diversity in terms of the faces and the people who are on the board. So that might be something that the club consider at this moment in time. I just wonder if there might be somebody with big football experience, whether there are an Arsenal person or not, who might be useful in this current setup. But then it's a delicate one, isn't it? If you've got a manager, if you've got a technical director, where does somebody else fit into that? I feel, as I said earlier, the recruitment side of things is where we have the biggest and most obvious gap right now?
What I'm hearing, Andrew, is Wenger in. That's what I'm hearing.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I know. But it becomes an interesting one, because if you do bring in someone in that role, what is that role? And does it then leave us in that similar situation where it's kind of impossible to judge Edu, you know? It's a really interesting one.
Yeah, too many cooks and all that kind of stuff. But
I mean, the thing is, as a fan, the guy I have got my faith in is Mikel.
Yeah.
And the reason I had to do that is because he managed to win a trophy in the most tumultuous half season you could ever expect in his first ever job as a manager. He has earned that, I believe. And I basically, without wishing to sound too much like I've sort of gone mad and got blind faith, I kind of think I trust his, I sort of trust his judgment at this point in until it goes wrong.
Do you feel like he might have some sort of an input into the way the club will be structured?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was trying to say when I sort of said, you know, if he's got someone in mind as technical director. I do think he came from a club that had a really clear executive structure and quite a dense one too at Manchester City, with lots of people filling different roles, but a clear complicity between them. And I don't think he is adverse to those relationships. I don't think he wants to be Arsene necessarily. I think that he's happy to work with people if he thinks they share his vision and he thinks that they're competent. And I, you know, one of the things I hope the club does is I hope they conduct sort of exit interviews with people who have left in this period, not just Raul, obviously, but also people from the scouting department. You know, if I were them, I would be sounding out people and saying, look, what do you think went wrong at this club? What do you think we could do better? I think that's good practice. Whether they will, I've got absolutely no idea. But I would be doing that, and I would be speaking to people who are still there. I'd be speaking to Mikel. I'd be asking him about his experience at Manchester City. You know, Arsenal do need to... We're saying the structure hasn't worked, and that is right, but the structure has been an absolute mess. I mean, it's been a sort of cavalcade of different people being promoted and fired. I mean, you know, what never was tested was Ivan Gazidis, Raul Sinyei and Sven Mislintat. That had no real run to assess it. And I'm not saying it would have worked, but that was the original plan, and kind of everything since then has been a bit of a fudge, to be honest.
When it was put in place, after you have a manager like Wenger, it felt like a good idea. Mm. You've got the chief executive, you've got the head of recruitment, and you've got the head of football relations, as he was back then, but he was the guy who was going to get the deals done. So you have this trio working in tandem. Obviously, it didn't work out. I mean, do you look back on the departure of Mislintat with regrets? Because I know people will say, well, what did he bring to the club? You know, Aubameyang, Socrates, anyone could have brought you two experienced players like that. There was, obviously, Torreira was a player who we were excited about but didn't quite work out. Guendouzi, again, similar, a player who looked good and was sort of the kind of signing that you were looking at Arsenal trying to make. I feel like he only really had one window at Arsenal, and in it, I mean, I know
summer,
he brought Aubameyang
the summer, yeah,
and he brought in Leno, who's been very good. Torreira, people liked, but we've had controversial opinions about him in the not too distant past. Guendouzi, that was not so much a player quality issue as a character issue, whatever's gone on there. Lichtsteiner, a short-term cover for right back. And then what did we do? Who was the other one? Socrates, right? Who, you know, on paper, 29 years of age, decent centre half. I don't think Socrates is the greatest player in the world, but I don't think Socrates has been anywhere near as bad as Luiz. I don't think he's been anywhere near as bad as Mustafi has been for us down the years. So I think he's slightly unfairly maligned, if not the world's greatest player. But after that, You know, Mislintat had no input whatsoever into the January window, apart from saying, do not sign Denis Suarez, and then he's gone. So you can't really judge the work that he's done in that role, because he just did not have enough time and was not given the freedom to work the way that he should have been allowed work, because this power struggle was ongoing between himself and Sanjehi. So do you have regrets about Mislintat in that sense? Because it feels to me like, you know, even if it's not Sven who's the guy, his approach and his methods are much more in tune with what a modern football club should be doing.
Yeah, and to be clear, I mean, if we could hire someone like Sven as our chief scout now, I'd be all for it. But Sven didn't want to be a chief scout. You know, ultimately, he wanted to be a technical director. And that's, you know, I think what saw Raul basically push him out. I think it's tricky because people will always say he just signed all the old boys from Dortmund, right? And to an extent, there is some truth in that. I mean, Henrik Mkhitaryan arrived in January 2018, but I'd say there were particular circumstances to that deal in terms of what we had to try and get done with Manchester United.
I wouldn't put any of that on Mislintat. I think
I wouldn't either. I think it was just circumstance. Aubameyang, I mean, probably the best signing Arsenal have made in the last, I don't know, 5 years in terms of what he's contributed to the club. When you go into that summer, I mean, people will point out Lichtsteiner, but Lichtsteiner was a free and it was a one-year deal with an option, wasn't it? So he left at the end of that. I mean, it's not exactly 3 years for Willian in the same age bracket. It was 1 year. It didn't work out. He went. It cost us, in real terms, very, very little. And actually, even the players that we're talking about from that summer that we're like, well, they didn't really work out. So look at the three sets of crosses to one side. He was an ageing centre-half. I think you can question the wisdom of that decision, but that's what Arsenal wanted, an experienced centre-half. Leno, Torreira, Guendouzi. Now, two of those three players, we'd say, haven't worked out. But I think it's incredibly likely that Arsenal would make a profit on all three of them. And that is credit to Mislintat. And that's what we're talking about in terms of trying to take a medium-term view and sign players who, even if it doesn't necessarily work, you are given a measure of protection. And in that summer window, I think he did manage to do that. Now, I guess my overall feeling is he didn't have long enough for us to really know what he would have done in Arsenal. I think we do know enough to say that he had pretty different plans for the January window that followed. And when we ended up with Denis Suarez, that would have been probably more beneficial to us. But it's a really good point you make about Edu not being the talent spotter. And as long as you're not that person, and if you don't have the facility to make that through other people who you appoint, you are vulnerable to a third party, an agent, an intermediary saying, well, what about this bloke?
Yeah.
I think. But, I mean, you know, this is... like we say, the point we're making is we never saw that structure really function, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it always felt to me like the potential for...
On paper, it made sense.
On paper, it made sense, but human nature being human nature, you know, who was going to have the power? Were they all happy to share the power? It turned out that wasn't the case. You know, there was a power vacuum when Wenger left, and I think we're only just coming out of it now with the departure of Sanjehi. So it is a weird one.
Slightly more lighthearted question from Dr. Zebra on Twitter, who says, hey guys, how fun has it been seeing the favourites lose in Europe? Should the format change to a single match? And then the real chicken dipper on Patreon chips in. All this serious stuff aside, isn't it hilarious to think we've now had a more successful season than everyone except Liverpool in the Premier League? I guess that means in terms of trophies.
In terms of trophies, yeah. Financially, and what it might mean financially next season, I suppose you could make the case for the teams that finished in the Champions League. It's funny. Of course it's funny.
It is funny. I've really enjoyed it, I have to say.
Do you know what? I haven't really watched any of it.
Have you not?
No, because I keep forgetting it's on and stuff, and it's on weird times, and then it's like, I just haven't watched any of the Champions League at all.
Right. It's been weird. Quite good fun, I would say. I mean, the games have been enjoyable. I loved Guardiola's face when Man City went out. That was great to see. Man U fans all up in arms, and Paul Scholes saying the solution is just to spend more money after they went out against Sevilla. By the way, Arsenal wanted Monchi, didn't they, for the technical director role? I mean, who knows what sort of authority he would have been granted to do that job at Arsenal, but he has done a sensational job at Sevilla, building a really good squad very, very quickly.
I was always slightly, not concerned, but I wondered why, at the 11th hour, Monchi turned the job down. Because it was as good as done. It was as good as done.
Arsenal thought they had him, for sure.
And then he changed his mind. I mean, do you wonder? I mean, now it's hard not to wonder if he looked at what sort of a role he would be allowed carry out. You know what I mean? Did he look at it and go, well, what's the fucking point? If they're just going to sign clients from one or two agents, what's the point of me doing any work here? Because I'm not going to be allowed to have an impact.
He wants to be the most senior football voice, right, at his club, and he is that at Sevilla. And funnily enough, that's what Edu is now. Now that Raul's gone,
except they do two very different things.
They do two very different things, exactly. Mm. But anyway, it would have been another fascinating sort of reality timeline where he was appointed at Arsenal. See where that would have taken us. Probably Unai leading us to glory right now, but. Yes, I have been watching the Champions League. I have been thoroughly enjoying it. I've even enjoyed some of the Europa League, which is an impressive feat. Do I think that the format should change to a single game?
Yes. I mean, there's only one reason why it's not, and that's TV.
Yeah.
Two-legged semi-finals, bullshit. Play a semi-final, get it over with.
I have to say, I actually like what it is now. So I like the neutral venue and I like the one leg. I think it is a lot more dramatic. And I think, you know, having it at one ground or the other, as you do in the FA Cup, I think that's fine. But I think, you know, there'll always be that thing of, oh, well, we were unlucky with the draw. We got two away games or something. I think having it neutral is good. So if I was sort of reimagining the Champions League, I would probably have the group stages or some nonsense like that so that everyone can still make their money and they can get all their TV rights and then keep the knockout period or a portion of the knockout period for this kind of playoff mini tournament where, you know, everyone could just sort of swim around in money for a week and keep that away from the domestic leagues.
So let me ask you this, based on the semi-finals, who would you like to see win the Champions League? Because, look, clearly Bayern Munich, no.
Are the best team.
Yeah. Then you've got PSG. Like, how can anybody be happy that PSG won anything, unless you're a PSG fan? So then you've got Lyon and disgustingly sweet energy drink Leipzig. I mean, I'm on for Lyon here because of the Arsenal connection with the Jeff in midfield.
Of course.
Imagine the Jeff leaves Arsenal for £1 million and ends up winning the fucking Champions League the next season, having been transferred for 25 odd million pounds. That's not great. It's not great. No. Mm. Anyway, I'd like it.
Lyon, I think, are going to be the neutrals' favourite, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Leipzig are fun to watch, but there are reasons that people, you know, object to them. I mean, I'm just glad it's not City. I find City's sort of dominance very dull, and it amuses me that they can't win the Champions League despite their best efforts.
Yeah, he's got a what do you call it?
He's bald?
Yeah, he is bald, very bald.
Yeah.
He's got a bald spot when it comes to the Champions League. I was going to say like a mental block or something like that, but there's something fundamentally wrong with him in the Champions League, isn't it?
It's so childish, the ball thing. I mean, I fully recognise that I'm ball too, and I've never won a Champions League either. But yeah, I do.
Yeah, but
enjoy...
you've never failed to win a Champions League, James.
Exactly. I mean, I guess if Bayern Munich win it, I can completely make my peace with that because they are the best, you know. And I suspect they will win it.
Serge Gnabry. Left Arsenal.
Yes, exactly. It's Gnabry versus Jeff in the Champions League semi-final. painful to watch.
Okay, I've got one final one before we go.
Yeah.
It comes from Twitter from Chocolate Whiskey Nuts, who's at Nuts Whiskey. And he says, what do you think of the Anelka documentary on Netflix? Of all the current Arsenal players, who would interest you to have a documentary filmed?
I haven't seen the Anelka thing, have you?
Yeah, I watched it over the weekend.
Is it any good?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, he's a bit like, well, I acted terribly, but then so did they. And that made me act terribly even more. And sure. Now I probably shouldn't have done that. But I'd still do it again because that's who I am. But, you know, I thought it was interesting. I think he's a fairly interesting character. Pretty much everybody who's on there, and there's like Arsene Wenger, Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, Robert Pires,
right.
Didier Drogba. There's even some William Gallas, I'm sorry to say. But pretty much everybody says, like, he is just the most misunderstood guy that there is. He's a really good guy and, you know, and everything else. But, you know, he just has this sort of aspect to his character, which I think we were all able to see throughout his career. Wenger says at one point, he says, like, he's had a great career. Look, let's not beat around the bush. He's had a great career. But if you ask me, like, deep in my heart, could there have been more? I would say yes, without question. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing here. And I think that's the thing that occurs to me, that, you know, it's not even the advice of his brothers, who I think were perhaps a little unfairly maligned at the time. It's him. You know, he just has this aspect to his character, which is in some ways confrontational, or he won't back down when he feels like he's been wronged in certain ways. The whole thing around the French team and the World Cup in South Africa is very, very interesting as well. So I watched it. I think it maybe glossed over one or two things a little bit easily, but I thought it was really watchable. He's an interesting character. I kind of liked him in it. I wasn't sure if I would or not.
I'll check it out.
I recommend it. Genuinely, I do recommend it. I mean, there's not a huge amount of Arsenal in it, but there's enough Arsenal faces that pop up throughout to make it, you know, to make that connection. And it's a good watch.
Yeah. I saw it being criticised because he didn't sort of address the canal controversy.
He did. I mean, it does.
He
does address it. I sort of need to go back and remind myself of the ins and outs and the details of it as well, though.
Right.
Because I can't quite remember, you know, some things are left quite vague as to the gesture itself and,
yeah,
you know,
the significance
of it and the context of it and that kind of stuff. And his connection with that guy, who I think was he a comedian or something like that in France? So
yeah.
I need to go back and read over that. But they do talk about it. He does talk about it in the in the thing. So
what was the second part of the question? Who would I like to see a documentary on?
Yeah, I guess it's like whoever it is now.
I tell you what. I mean, we're not far off the Wenger book, which will be another big story, I'm sure, when that drops in Arsenal's season. Who would I like to see a documentary on? I mean, there's a lot of people, to be honest. I really enjoyed the Roy Keane, Patrick Vieira one. I don't know if you saw that they did on ITV. That was quite a good summation.
But I think the question is about which of the current players would you like to see a documentary?
Oh, current players. Oh, I don't care about them. No, I would choose. Who would I choose? Let's have a look. You got anyone in mind?
I'm not saying that he would be my favourite or anything like that, but I do wonder if a David Luiz documentary might be quite fun.
Yeah,
in
sure.
In terms of, you know, his career and the career he's had in England, in France, you know, working or in Brazil with the Brazil national team as well. I think it could be an interesting one. I think Aubameyang obviously would be an interesting one too. Beyond that, it's hard to sort of get yourself up for behind the scenes 90 minutes of Mohamed Elneny, for example.
Sure.
You know.
Well, maybe we'd learn something. We don't know.
You never know.
I mean, you know, Hector would be interesting, I think, because he's got quite an interesting life and a lot of broad interests. So I think that would be quite a good one. But yeah, I mean, you know, let's wait until the end of their careers when we can sort of more establish who are the kind of cult figures.
The end of their careers? Well, Willian it is then.
Yes, well,
we kid. Okay, look, we are going to leave it there for this particular episode. Thank you as ever for being here. Thanks for listening. For Patreon members, we'll do something midweek for you as well, a transfer pod. So get on board if you like, patreon.com/arseblog. Don't forget to check out James's article today in The Athletic, along with Amy and David Ornstein. Very well written piece on the whole Senyahi issue as well, if you need more to read about that. But again, thanks a million. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.